Happy Mother's Day. The Tax Conference Committee will come to order, and we're going to hear a Duluth provision in just a moment, but first, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer the CS-0155 amendment. Madam Chair, I call this the Me Too Squared Amendment. It's modeled off of Senator Moy's provision having to do with St. Paul River Center finances. This has to do with doing something similar in Minneapolis for the purpose of Target Center debt and neighborhood revitalization purposes in Minnesota. It's a transformation of our pre-79 TIF districts, optional to the city, creates some revenue. It expires in 10 years. Is your blank filled in? I have the number here. The original tax capacity of the district is, that should read, $2,731,854.
Okay, so everybody understands Senator Dibble is doing what we did with River Center yesterday, I believe. Was it yesterday or the day before? I can't remember. And this is not, this is a TIF district that'll pay fiscal disparities. It's not a pre-79. It's a new TIF district. It's actually not the greatest situation for Minneapolis because it's them bearing the burden when, in fact, they should not be. But it's a short-term option until Minnesota steps up to the plate and assists these facilities, Target Center and River Center, which is really what Minnesota should be doing. So I just want to note, I know Representative Dabney has made the point, I think, repeatedly that some of these things are kind of, you know, 50-50 because it takes the pressure off all the rest of us at the legislature to do what we should be doing with these regional facilities. But it gives an option to Minneapolis, and if they choose not to do it, then, you know, it's permissive. So I think we understand it's similar to the River Center option where I think these communities are feeling they're running out of options. So discussion.
I should also mention that Hennepin County is kept whole.
And Hennepin County will be out of the TIF, so they will not be shifting on to the county. So, I mean, that also highlights the really unfairness of this, and we just did it for River Center, and these are permissive, so these two communities won't have to do them if they don't want to, and they really shouldn't have to, but it gives them an option if they have no other situation. Discussion.
Just to be clear, maybe council can answer this. The tax capacity, it's a pre-79 TIF, and the tax capacity that is now being included under this new TIF district, that tax capacity will be included in calculation for the LPA one.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I should point out that this is a number of districts in Minneapolis. It's all the districts that were included in Senator all the pre-79.
I think Senator Bach is making the point, again, this is not the best situation for Minneapolis, but until everyone else helps out, they're looking to do it on their own, just as St. Paul was trying to yesterday. Senator Moy.
Madam Chair, and I didn't have a chance to ask Senator Dibble this, but Senator Dibble, the intention here is that there somehow Senator Torres raised concern about the neighborhood organizations would be addressed with the increment.
Madam Chair, yes. Absolutely. For the record, that's one of the two goals for use of this increment.
Thank you.
Appreciate the discussion. I think Senator Bach and I and all the conferees understand how very difficult of a situation these two communities are in, and they have been sort of had to look at a menu of bad policies to try to solve a problem. And at some point, Minnesotans are going to have to contribute more to the Target Center and the River Center. These are regional facilities that everyone is benefiting from. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. You want to just Duluth? Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the RDR 0112. I think it's been handed out, members. Members, and if Representative Murphy could come to the table, I'd like to have her have an opportunity to speak. Representative Murphy and I, along with Representative Yarlson, Huntley, and Senator Solden, all represent part of Duluth. And, Madam Chair, Duluth is a first-class city that has some levy authority that few school districts have under the lease purchase levy and the alternative facilities levy. And it allows them to do building construction without going out for a vote of the public. And the Duluth School Board used that authority given to them by the legislature to do a reorganization of the school system in Duluth, build a number of new buildings, close some buildings. And they went through an extensive public process with over 100 meetings in the community, and are moving forward with the option they identified as the red plan. And they intend to sell $257 million in bonds. And that's become very problematic in the city. I think since the plan was originally adopted back in June and then approved by the Board of Education in January, there's been growing angst in the community about the idea of putting that much debt on the property tax. So the school board, sensing that, has made a commitment to the public, intended at least has, is that their intent is to only put on the property tax the levy necessary to pay off $125 million in bonds, and that the balance of the bonds would be paid for through the sale of excess property that they're going to have by closing a number of buildings and by the anticipated savings that they're going to get by this new configured school system. Well, there's some feeling in on the part of the public, and it seems growing, that potentially the school board might not live up to what they're saying they're going to do today. Because they do have the authority under the law to levy for the entire $257 million. So what I'm proposing that we do, and I talked with Representative Yaros on the phone this weekend, and he supports this approach. It's not his preferred approach. His preferred approach would be to have a vote on the part of the public on proposal on the red plan. But I think he realizes that it likely would go down and all the work and planning that's gone into this would be for naught. But I sense, even though that this is a compromise on the part of Representative Yaros, the other provision in it, so this limits the school district's ability to levy for the debt service on $125 million in bonds. It limits that authority, that cap, through 2013. So that after 2013, the school board then would have the authority to levy for more than $125 million. And as I kind of worked through this and I met with the school superintendent a couple of days ago, I think it would be dangerous for us to lock the school district into the commitment that they're making today through the entire term of the bonds. We don't know what they're they badly need excess operating levy. They're going to have a proposal on the ballot this fall. I think it's going to be problematic. I'm going to publicly support it. I think Representative Murphy's going to probably publicly support it because the school district needs operating money. So what this does is it has an escape clause in it that the levy cap only exists through 2013. By then, there will have been new school board elections. There's likely to be some new school board members. And I think the new school board needs to have the opportunity to revisit the issue. But for now, at least, this puts in law what the school board is telling the public. And after 2013, the new board would have an opportunity to revisit the issue. I suspect, members, like a lot of these things, most people in Duluth are not going to be happy. And they're on both sides of this camp. But I do think this is as close as we can get to finding some common ground where the project can still go forward, the school board can do what they've told the public they want to do, gives them some flexibility in the future in the event they're unable to pass excess operating levy referendums, so that somehow the school district, through some action of the legislature, doesn't end up statutory operating debt, and we don't know what's going to happen to enrollment. There's external factors, I think, out of the school board's control that at some point in time they need to have the opportunity to revisit it. So, Madam Chair, that's my argument for what I would call the compromise on the red plan, and I'd like to have Representative Murphy have an opportunity. She lives right outside of Duluth, spends more time in Duluth than I do, so she has probably a little better finger on the pulse of the people in Duluth. If she could have a moment to speak.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Murphy and Representative Yarros and Representative Huntley have this has put all of them in a difficult situation, and I want to appreciate that they all bring a little bit different perspective, and it's tough for the entire delegation, including you, Mr. Chair. I understand that. I also want to, just for the record, have folks understand that we know this should have gone through the education committees. Came up very late, and Representative Greiling and Representative Murphy were aware of that, and so we were kind of left to deal with it in the tax committee. It would have ended up here anyhow, because it's a tax issue too. But, you know, the preference would have been to have a little more airing, but, you know, we're here now, and I think you've all found a solution, I think. We have heard from Representative Yarros, and he's willing to support this, but I just really want to respect for folks who have not followed this issue that the entire delegation, both in the House and Senate side, is in a difficult situation. It's not a good set of issues. But we're glad you're here, Representative Murphy. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members. This isn't an easy topic because, as you've heard, it's a very divisive issue in our community. And everyone has an opinion, and everyone knows that their opinion is the right opinion, and that probably we either have the ultimate say about what can happen, or we shouldn't be messing around with it one bit, because those people are elected to make those decisions. But the reason I signed on to the bill in the first place, and I testified to this in the House Tax Committee, was because I thought that having such a huge bond issue, not on one project, but on a total plan for the whole school district, for almost between $250 to $300 million costs, that should have gone to a vote. And if Duluth doesn't have to vote on it, why should any other community have to vote? And I think that's an issue that's going to come back. But then, after that, Mr. Soberg brought to me a list of the number of projects in school districts across the state that have been done in the last 5 years without bond referendums. And I was just amazed at that list, at the numbers of school and the amount of money. It's not for $1 million here and $2 million there project, but it too goes up into the $70 million to $125-30 million ranges without referendums. And so I thought, we've got to look at this issue. It also sets a precedent in other ways. But since that time that I first spoke on the issue, it's also come to my attention that there are many people in the community that say, you can't stop this now. They've hired the contractors for the first two projects, for Stowe School and Lakewood School. The ground has been turned, and the contractors are hired and ready to go. The tax bill that we're paying on May 15th, the money for these bond issues have been levied. And so it's like Representative Lanning said, the horse is out of the barn. And for us to put the roadblock in of the levy of the reverse referendum, I'm not as sure about that now as I was 2 weeks ago. And so I don't know if this is the answer. I don't know if what Representative Yaros's original bill was the answer. But I know that we can't let school just, we can't, unless we give them the authority and all the school districts' authority, we have to be able to say your decisions are affected by the legislative decisions, and the legislative decisions sometimes are affected by your decisions. We're in this together. We promise that school districts across the state that we were going to fund those school districts from the state, and we haven't kept that promise. So now they have operational levies in addition to bonding levies, in addition to not enough money. The Education Committee is meeting to decide what amounts of money are going to be given per pupil this year. The school districts can't run without our decisions. And so I don't think it's far-fetched for us to weigh in on this issue. But I just wish I was Solomon and had the right answer. And I don't. But I do have the best intentions to let the people of Duluth know that they've been heard, and let the people of Duluth know that they're not hanging out there by themselves. And that is what I said I was willing to do. That levy referendum in the fall has to pass, the operational levy referendum. And I'll do everything I can to make sure that it does. And Senator Bach has said he will. And they need the money to operate the schools, and they need the money from too many schools to consolidate and make a more efficient. And they have chosen the red plan, and so the go red, go.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Senator Wong.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Murphy, I got a letter on this, I think, from somebody in Duluth.
Just one?
I think when the conferees were announced for the conference committee. And I was taken aback by how emotional the letter was to me. I couldn't imagine what it's like to represent the area when I just sit on the conference committee. But the letter was mentioning some things about Senator Pretner Solon and her position, how they're opposed to what she's trying to do, and or something like that. Don't quote me on that. But does this kind of take care of some of that heated feelings on the two sides? Does this get us at least halfway there or not?
Senator Moi, I should mention before Representative Murphy responds, and I did not mean to omit her, Senator Solon actually came to our hearing in the House, and I invited her to testify, and she as well has been, all of the entire delegation is in a tough spot here, and we really want to respect that. And so she's,
yeah,
what they all share is a strong support of their public schools and trying to respond to their constituency as well. But Representative Murphy.
Senator, every single email except the one that's copied over and over and over has been very emotional on both sides. I have never in my 32 years received so many messages of with things in them that were not nice. And the letters to the editor in the newspaper are exactly the same way. It seems like you cannot be for something or against something without being critical. And that has to stop. And they've got to address, we've got to be able to address that and speak out against that. And it seems that they both sides are personalizing it to who's with them and who's against them. And it's just growing and growing rather than becoming more subdued. And two teachers were down here the other day just to talk about what it's like in their classrooms and what it's like in their buildings. And both those teachers are going to be in different buildings in the future because of the plan. And they just said, it's gotten so much, there's been so much discussion, it has to stop.
Thank you.
We can't forget that Representative Dill is also, has a portion of the Dulles School District, a small portion.
Senator Bach, Mr. Chair, how much does Representative Dill have? I'm just trying to figure that out.
And I'm sure when
seven townships.
Seven townships. So they're not in Dulles. He doesn't have Duluth at all, but he has students.
He has Duluth addresses.
And he has students.
He does not have anything in the Duluth city limits.
Okay.
Madam Chair, when I represented Senator Dill's district, or Representative Dill's district, one of the researchers in the House one time, just for fun, calculated how many square miles his district is.
Yeah.
It was smaller then than it is now, because we've gone through a redistricting since then. The number then was 7,700 square miles. And there actually are five states in this country that are smaller than his legislative district.
I guess he can't door knock every single household, huh, Mr. Chair?
But, Madam Chair,
please.
Lakewood is in his district, and that's who's getting the new addition in the first contract.
Well, I think, you know, we all want to support what you all have put together, and we know that no one's going to like whatever happens here now. Mr. Chair.
There will be people on both sides that are unhappy, but I think it's just it's our best effort to try to move forward. I do think it should slow down animosity, hopefully put some stability back in, and hopefully the community will move beyond this issue, start thinking about November and the operating levy that the school district badly needs if it's going to serve the students and maintain the kind of curriculum that we all expect students should get in the state no matter what school you're in. And it's unfortunate that we're in a situation where we have to rely on voter-approved operating excess levy referendums, but that's where we are. And I do think this will hopefully close the door on the red plan so that it can move forward under these circumstances and people can start focusing instead on this and the divisive nature of the red plan, start focusing on building some momentum, move the curriculum part forward by an effort to put some kind of proposal forward that can get the voters support in November and pass the excess operating levy. And Madam Chair, that's critical because the school district of Duluth, in the most recent numbers I've seen, is like the fourth worst funded, I believe. They've got serious financial problems, and they have a current excess operating levy that's going to come off of $365 a student, so that their operating situation is bad, and it could get worse, likely, if that levy doesn't pass in the fall. So somewhere the community's got to get beyond the red plan and start get into the next stage, which is about the student curriculum. And I guess this is just my best effort tonight to try put the red plan to bed and allow the community to start thinking about what we're going to do to operate and make sure that the students have the programs that I think we all would like them to have. And there's just it's just a tough issue. I mean, no matter what Representative Murphy and I and Senator Sloan, no matter what we do, there are going to be people not happy on both sides. I mean, it is a lose-lose for us. But at some point, somebody has to call a truce. And I just think that's the position we find ourselves in.
We appreciate that. Further discussion, we want to thank Representative Murphy for her testimony. We appreciate it. And further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Bott. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I have an amendment that I would like to pass around, if someone could do that, on the disabled veterans from Chapter 154 that we passed back in March. And the wording is on the bottom of this sheet that is going around. And I will move that wording that is on the bottom of that page. And you can all see that. And then what this is going to do is where you have a surviving spouse of a disabled veteran, there's kind of a difference in opinion between the House and the Senate. We think this is a compromise. So what would happen is if the disabled veteran who is receiving the exclusion would pass away, the surviving spouse would receive that exclusion for one additional assessment year. So that's actually two payable years. So let's say it happened in 08, then it would be assessment 09 payable in the 10. So they would still see the exclusion for two more years. So that's what that is doing in short. And the other part about this is on relative homestead, there would be no relative homestead. They'd still get the regular homestead, but not a relative homestead that to qualify for the exclusion. Also, the intent of the law, although somewhat unclear, is that if you're receiving the exclusion, the $150,000 at 70% disability or $300,000 market value at 100, that on top of that would not be the 1B classification. I think that was the intent, and so that excludes that part of it. And on the very first one, the current, there's like 33 current surviving spouses for veterans. Was that paraplegics or was that? And they would receive the 1B, which is the disability one. So that's the effect of the amendment.
Mr. Chair and Senate Conferees, the department's nodding. I want to bring everyone back. Representative Coonan made the motion last night with the caveat that if Representative Marquardt had some changes, we'd bring them back. And I understand that Representative Coonan, Representative Marquardt, and Senator Skoy have worked this out tonight. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think Representative Marquardt, if you offered the amendment, you'd need to withdraw that so I can move to reconsider what we did yesterday first.
That's right. I think that's accurate.
Very good. I will withdraw that.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I would like to move that we reconsider the motion that we made to approve Article 13, Section 14.
Okay,
it's on page 74 of the side-by-side.
Okay, to the reconsideration, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. We are reconsidering the motion.
And now we reconsider the motion.
Well, reconsidering the item.
Okay, now I move the amendment.
Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the work on that. That's been kind of complicated for everybody involved. So we appreciate the folks who worked with the department to get that done. Senator Bach.
Minerals, Madam Chair.
Yes, please. And can I say we're going to do the minerals article now. You know, Senator Bach, normally I have to witness the handshake between you and Representative Rukavina. I'm a little worried that I didn't actually see that happening. But I have a note now. He was in the room earlier, said it was okay, but I had Ms. Sen called him just to make sure. And here's his note. He's left the Capitol and isn't planning to come back. He said he's fine with Bach's minerals article. Got to get it on the tape so everybody understands. Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the there's peace in the valley. I'd like to move the DV0147. And members, these are a number of changes to the taconite articles that we have in law. Nothing else in here except a bunch of provisions relative to the taconite production tax, how it gets paid out. Some changes on the board, changing DM so that the citizen members can get the same kind of per diem that legislators get. makes it clear that if we currently have a project going to develop where they're going to use some old waste iron ore tailings basins and recycle that into back through a plant and take out the iron bearing content. So it's a waste rock, and the current law doesn't work for that. We didn't know how to tax it, so we make some changes there. We make a change that there's a program we have called the Iron Range Higher Education Account. We put a little bit of additional money into that, Madam Chair. So that's what we're proposing to do.
Discussion. In Senator Brock, there's no education stuff going on here on this one this year.
No money in this that goes into schools. There is three additional cents per ton that goes into a higher education account, but it has nothing to do with K-12.
Okay, great. Discussion. All those in favor of Senator Brock's amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Thank you. Were we going to do Representative Dabney, do you have your amendment ready?
Yeah, Madam Chair, yes. It's the APD 3149A87 amendment distributed to members previously.
Okay, so Representative Dabney moves the APD 3149A87 amendment. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a provision introduced by Representative Hornstein that's also in Representative Hillstrom's omnibus local government bill. It simply extends Minneapolis Park Board's park dedication fee authority to commercial and industrial properties, as is done commonly in other cities. It's a quite common strategy around the state.
Discussion. I think we all understand this one. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Thank you.
Senator Skoy, do you have the seasonal rec delay?
Madam Chair, I just met with Mr. Paulson and Mr. Bolette, and they are
working
on
okay.
language there.
Representative Marquardt, are we doing something with special ag homestead?
Yes, I do.
Page 36 of the side-by-side?
That is, Madam Chair, that's page 26.
Page 26.
Of the side-by-side. House Article 5, Section 2. And I'm going to ask Mr. Hagan to come up from the Revenue Department, if he would. This is situation where we have special use properties around the state, and what we're looking at is doing this just for non-metro, I think, is because it's really not needed in the metro. But in the areas where you've got assessors and it's unique properties and so forth, and I guess if it would be all right, Mr. Hagan could address this just for a second.
Yes, please, Mr. Hagan.
Madam Chair, thank you. This provision that requires the Department of Revenue to assist in the assessment of special use industrial property is, in our opinion, an excellent provision. We certainly are supportive of it. It would provide much-needed assistance to particularly rural out-of-state counties that, no matter how capable the assessor, they just don't have the technical knowledge or the ability to properly appraise these special purpose industrial properties. At the present, this leaves the assessor in a really bad position, where if whatever value they come up with is likely either too low or too high, and they're very, very subject to a lot of litigation potential and at sometimes really amazingly high cost to the counties. Or their other option is to stipulate the values, which more often than not adds to a lesser value than they should properly have because they don't have the expertise to properly defend the value. Representative Marquardt's proposal calls for the Department of Revenue to provide assistance and technical knowledge to the assessors on these special purpose properties, particularly in the outstate areas where it's most needed. The downside from our perspective, even though we think it is an excellent provision, the downside is there is a cost in staffing, and we don't at the present time have the necessary expertise on staff. But having said that, we certainly support it and are very much in favor of it.
Okay, so we have a lot of questions. So I've picked up that we haven't had enough discussion on this one yet, but we want to get those questions on the record. There was a bill that was in both bodies, I believe, that folks were talking about. This is not that bill, so we just want to be clear that this is not the issue that I think some people are starting to think it is now. So, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two things. One is I just wanted to be sure that local assessors are comfortable with this. That's one. And two, I don't think I'm reading the language. I don't think it literally excludes the metro area. I think the expectation is it will be primarily utilized for greater Minnesota, but I don't see anything that says it does exclude the metro, which is good, I think.
Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, no, that's right, Madam Chair. It doesn't say that. It's the entire state right now.
And local assessors want this? They like this?
Madam Chair, I don't know of local assessors. We think right now there's some problems around the state. And so I think to help solve this problem, you may not get a yes from those who are involved with the problem. So I can't say there's support of the assessors. And I don't know, maybe Mr. Hagan would have more on that.
And Senator Dibble, I think what the testimony we heard in the House, and Senator Skoy, is there's some very complicated, unique situations across the state. They're just very complicated situations that some would say the local assessor maybe isn't doing it quite right, and that can be completely wrong. Maybe they are doing it right. But there are these very unique things where someone has to come in and assess them. And we now have sort of groups who are interested in guiding all of us to a way that is favorable to their desire.
Mm-hmm.
And they're opposing groups. And the House felt the better way is to let the department, who has pretty broad experience, tackle these, rather than bringing pressure to bear in local situations. In the metro, now, these are more the processing facilities, but in the metro, when you have a county like Hennepin, where the assessors are actually quite able to do some very complicated assessments, they do things like, what is Southdale worth? What is the Mall of America worth? I mean, imagine how complicated these assessments become. We're starting to see some of these issues around the whole state, where you have some very unique processing facility that doesn't exist anywhere else in the state of Minnesota, and somebody's trying to make a judgment call. And then, let's be honest, being really lobbied one way or the other. And the impacts can be in the millions of dollars of property tax. And, in fact, now bills are being introduced on one side or the other. And we were trying to take the influence out of all the groups and put it on the department. So, we're open to a different way. We're just trying to sort of halt the folks who are coming in now to begin to carve up assessment practices that will benefit them. And they certainly have every right to do that. We understand that everyone has the right in the political system to fight for their own tax preferences. But we just thought the best approach was to ask the department to take a look. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Hagan, could you just help me understand what the let the department help, the local assessors, who requests the help, how does the process get started, what's the department going to do? Can you walk me through, not the assessing mechanisms, but how does it get initiated and who does what?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, quite honestly, I haven't thought that through all the way. I guess my initial response was, the way I was thinking of it initially was the county would initiate the contact with the department. And if I might add, I believe the MAO is strongly supportive of this proposal. The rural assessors realize they need the help on these special purpose properties. So I guess the way I'd envision it is we would probably identify the properties that are contained in the bill, and it would happen in one of two ways, I'm guessing, that we would either make an overture to the various counties saying that you might have an ethanol plant or a sugar beet plant or name the special purpose industrial property, and we'd be happy to go through the property and assess it with you. Or the second way it might happen is if the county assessor actually initiated the contact with the department and asked for some assistance with the properties. And I'm guessing that would probably be the bulk of the actions, where they would, I'm guessing if this were to pass, there'd be a pretty fast-forming line on county assessors asking assistance with various types of property.
And, Madam Chair, Mr. Hagan, then, so just so that for everybody listening and the tape, this, in order for this to be initiated, would have to be mutually agreeable by the department and the local assessor.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, that would certainly be fine with us, and I'd be happy to go with that understanding.
And so, Madam Chair, if the department doesn't have the money, you're going to be not have the ability to help. And if the local assessor thinks he's doing a fine job and he's got it well in hand, he's can keep doing what he's doing.
Madam Chair, Senator Squire, that's exactly correct.
Under that scenario, I support this.
Madam Chair.
And if I may just wrap somewhere. Senator Squire, I'm glad you're saying that on the tape, because I think the concern is no one's done anything wrong and no one is not qualified. There are no local assessors doing anything wrong. There's nobody who can't handle it. The problem really is existing in this building, where we're beginning to see folks who are figuring out that if they get different sort of directions in law on assessment practices, a lot of tax preferences can begin to take place that will never come through the Minnesota legislature, because they'll happen at the local level. And they're really, really complicated facilities. And so I think that all of us who may have heard one side or the other in some of these debates know that it's really not appropriate to be done in just little slices, and it's better to have the whole assessing community. So Representative Marquardt has a comment, but I want to be straight up, too, with you, Senator Squire, because I know you've tracked this really closely, that the intention is to be fair to all and not to accuse anyone of anything or say in any way a local assessor is not doing their job. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we're hoping this will avoid what's occurring now, where you have counties defending evaluations in courts, spending millions of dollars in these situations, and also the private enterprise spending millions of dollars. So we're hoping that maybe this will solve some of that. Also, Mr. Manson said that with the review of assessment practices and review of the nonprofit institutions in this, there is a price tag to do it, and it'd be about $150,000, Madam Chair, to do all of our studies that we've done so far, including this one. If we added this, would be about $150,000 for the revenue department to do those. So there's a fiscal cost to this.
Further discussion. We all understand this. Well, Senator Scoy.
Well, Madam Chair, under this provision that we're going to potentially adopt here, you know, we're putting in place a process where the department can be helpful, but they don't have any resources to be helpful with. So nothing's going to change. So what's the proposal coming out of the conference committee to deal with that?
Are you adding the money in the motion?
Yeah.
We need to address that.
No. Well, Madam Chair, if we've got the money, yes, I'd like to add that. If there's some money, there, it'd be $150,500. $150,500. That, Mr. Manson.
Came from the department.
$150,500 for all three of those studies. I don't know if we've paid for the other one.
No,
but that's
paid
not
for the other studies.
Oh, okay.
We'll ask staff to tell
okay.
us what we need.
All right.
The staff can do it.
We can work on
and
that.
And I think Senator Scoy is making the point that, you know, we don't want to say they should be helpful in these complicated situations and not assist them.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bach.
It's either $150,000 or $150,000.
Well,
no, I think it's per year.
Just 10.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I guess Mr. Manson gave me a list for all three of the things they're doing, including this one. And when I talked to Mr. Hagan earlier, he thought just on the special use would be $100,000. But I don't know if we've paid for the other one yet.
Just pick a number and move it.
So, have we paid for the other? So total amount on all of the studies, I would include $150,000.
Up the $150,000 just for the fiscal disparity study?
Yeah, we've already done that.
Yeah, this one doesn't include the fiscal disparity.
Well, I think we're confused by what
okay.
are the three things.
It includes
about.
The review of assessment practices. That is, if there's an appeal process,
okay.
and that one we passed, and then this special use properties, and then the study on the assessment of nonprofits. So I'm going to move $100,000.
Senator Bach and Senator Scoy, so we understand the motion. I just want to add one piece here, just for people to think about this. When Mr. Michael earlier, when we were talking about abatements in an economic development abatement thing that I had, Mr. Michael referenced abatements.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to wait and clear. Okay, so I just want to make a point that when I was talking about economic development abatements, Mr. Michael talked about there's this other abatement thing and people were confusing them. So back to the other abatement thing where you really go and sue on your taxes in court, and then you win, you get your taxes abated. These are the similar kind of problems. If the things don't get assessed correctly, you can be in very difficult abatement situations. And we've had, you know, we have a number of cities in the metro, when they lose an abatement case, they can have to find $4 or $5 million to, you know, give Southdale back the money because they over-assessed them, or give the Mall of America
Rosedale.
Back. And Rosedale. And these malls are coming in and kind of yearly or every couple of years, you know, just course of, you know, they just sue, and sometimes they win, sometimes they don't. So it's critical that these really complicated facilities, now mostly in greater Minnesota, get assessed correctly, because if they don't and folks prevail in court, there's going to be a huge local cost that becomes a budgeting issue for the local unit of government as they try to find the money because they have not prevailed in court. And I think people think assessors often are just going around trying to jack up prices to get money, and that's just not true. They're trying to get it right so they don't find themselves in a court situation and then have a huge budgeting issue for particularly a LGA recipient city. I mean, they're not equipped to deal with these sort of situations. Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, is it conceivable, is it desirable or possible for these local units to pay for this expert assistance from the department?
Senator Dill, my reaction would be I wouldn't want them to have to do that, because I think that just brings in another element. I mean, we, the state, funds the department, and we ask them to provide assistance in a myriad of issues so that we don't have any undue influence going on. But, I mean, I'd have to think about it. You know, Senator Sequoia? Representative Hillstrom.
Madam Chair, I would argue that we wouldn't want the local unit of government to be paying for it if we're trying to say this is kind of a third party who's giving a balanced assessment, kind of a neutral third party. So I would think we wouldn't want either side to have to pay for the assessment.
Senator Sequoia.
And so, Madam Chair, I understand completely what the motion is. You've got $100,000 that the department is going to the department to help with the assessing practices, if requested, for these special industrial equipments. Now, the second part that you're talking about now, am I missing something here?
We're not touching abatements. I'm just saying the net effect, if you will.
So we're just helping.
You could take Representative Coonan.
Changing that law, you're not doing anything
there.
You just.
So if Representative Coonan's district, somebody went out and assessed a facility there and was way off, and then they sue and then they win, his locally elected officials have got to figure out how to come up with the money now. So they don't have an interest in being off, contrary to what people might say. But we're trying to take out the undue influence of people bringing bills to this body to direct assessors locally to do things that may not be the things that they should be doing.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Does everyone understand what we're on then? Okay, discussion.
Madam Representative Chair, I got to clarify this. It would be $100,000 ongoing, not one time. I mean, they say they need one person to do this.
It won't be worth it.
Well,
so it's ongoing.
Madam Chair, and you would think that eventually they would kind of get the workload caught up and just have to deal with the new construction. Eventually that's going to happen, but it will take some time, so you're probably okay to go on going with it.
Okay. Senator Moore? No. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Senator Sequoia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I would like to move the DV-0149 amendment.
Chair.
Your desk.
Staff has a question on the last motion.
Oh, I'm sorry. Staff wants to clarify the last motion. Was there a question from staff?
I think it was.
Do they have it?
I think they got it.
Okay.
100,000 ongoing.
Okay. Spread. Ms. Von Mosch, are you understanding for the spreadsheet? And Ms. Templin.
Yep.
Madam Chair.
$100,000.
Ongoing.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a good reminder that staff is having a difficult time hearing us, so.
Can I ask another question? Senator Joy's point about to put language that actually says the Commissioner of Revenue shall assist if the county requests or that upon approval or so that it gets that.
Well,
to
I.
Rent.
Yeah.
We want some language in there that does that.
Madam Chair, let's just work that out with the intent of what's in the bill right now.
Okay, so we'll just direct staff to work on that.
Okay.
All right, Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe I've moved the DV-0149 amendment. Members, this is a effort by me to assist White Earth in the purchase of a treatment facility for Indian children that's located in Bemidji. It's called the Gilfillan Center. It's currently operated by the Episcopal Church, and they are selling selling this facility. And what we're proposing to do is to have White Earth buy this and operate it under a joint powers board with Red Lake and Leech Lake and White Earth. And part of the reason that this is important, outside of the ability to do a good job of treating these troubled children, is that if we are successful in getting this change done and getting this joint powers board operating, they will become licensed by the federal government to provide this treatment, and the reimbursement from the federal government will go to 100% from the current 50%. But we will receive this money in savings over the next couple of years. This is a governor's request. The House has passed this. It's in your Health and Human Services omnibus bill. In the Senate, it did get passed into the bonding bill, but not funded. And so it kind of got a little held up there. For anybody who's been following the legislative governor's offers, this is actually on the governor's request list as something to do. And so I thought if the Tax Conference Committee was willing to consider this, I certainly would be appreciative. And I would also like to mention that the Shakopee, Midwaukee, and Sioux Band has put $2 million into this, also recognizing the importance of getting this accomplished. So I would renew my motion.
Okay, so Senator Skoy moves DV-0149. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. We did the disabled veterans. Were you all ready for the sales tax moratorium yet, or we'll have to wait a little bit? We're getting there. Were we going to Representative Marquardt work on the mortgage and deed, the Section 29? Were you going to work on that? Page 29?
Yep.
Page 29 of the spreadsheet. And Senator Bach, we just adopted Senator Skoy's.
White Earth?
Yes. So that's all we've done as you stepped away.
Article 5, Section
yes.
2.
And so now Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. On Article 5, Section 12 of the House property tax bill is actually a broad bill that dealt with homes that are damaged. And if you fix these damaged homes up for 3 years, there's a break on the market value. Also, then, we added to that the same type of break is that if you move into a house that was foreclosed, that you also improve that, you would receive a market value break. So we're thinking that would create an incentive to make sure that these homes that are vacant would have someone move in and fix those up if need be.
I want you to listen to this one. We're on page 29 of the spreadsheet.
Section 12.
Section 12 is in this. This was Representative Broad's and the citizens and others.
This is
Did you understand
old
it?
Mortgaged, flood damaged home.
Correct.
This old foreclosed and damaged home program. Not this old house, this old foreclosed or damaged house. I wonder what you guys think of this.
Page 29.
Page 29, very bottom. And then moves into page 30.
Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Question for Representative Marquardt. My recollection is that this applies only to homesteaded properties. Am I right about that?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. And the department would like to weigh in on this one. Yes, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
I just wanted to point out that this is a new and significant complexity that I know it's being referred to as if it's a this old house like provision, but it's actually quite different from this old house. This old house provided a market value exclusion. This is a little bit more like limited market value, but it's not even like limited market value where you're phasing in some value. It's really a blended taxable market value. Where you're taking two different taxable market values and blending them over a period of time. So it's a really unique provision that isn't like anything that we've got or have ever done in the system. And it would generate a lot of complexity for the counties to administer this. It would cost a lot of money. It could have a lot of unintended consequences and interactions. It's one of those things that you don't really find out how rough it is until you put it in place and then you live with it. I'm also not so sure that it really targets the victims of foreclosures. It really actually is targeted towards the buyer of foreclosed properties, and they should already receive in their purchase price some recognition of the damage to the property. So it's kind of duplicative with some capitalization of the sales price that they might receive. And the disaster portion of this provision is also a little bit duplicative with some of the special session disaster relief that was passed last year. So you probably wouldn't necessarily need to have the improved disaster relief that you passed last year and this provision on top of it. Those become a little bit duplicative. So we do have some concerns about how to administer this provision.
Okay, so I think we understand it. I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay.
No.
Okay, that did not carry. Representative Marquardt.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Bach.
That section, it was defeated. I'm looking at the section above it. It was defeated. I'm wondering how many House provisions has the Senate defeated? Seems there was several provisions in here that were
The Senate is a little slower than the House in understanding the need of some of these provisions, so we'll be back. You know, Senator Bach, we listen to the citizens. We want to pass their requests. But we appreciate that you would like another year to help those folks in the foreclosed and damaged homes.
Sure. In that citizens' book, I remember Representative Marquardt said there were citizens' comments in there that liked the Senate's provision where if an individual was 65 years old and lived in their home for 25 years, taxes would be permanently frozen. So I hope when we get to that discussion, we'll remember that we had citizens that requested that provision.
We've got more things we want to take up. I'm sure you'll defeat another thing still. We're going to do this. You guys have this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Representative Coonan.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt Article 4, Section 8 from House File 2268, and that's the 2007 vetoed tax bill. With the effective date change from tax year 2007 to tax year 2008.
Okay, Representative Coon, so we understand this is a benefit to our veterans. We've passed this in the past. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, I move to reconsider the vote by which SCH 3149 A13 amendment was adopted by the conference.
Senator Bach moves a reconsideration. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion carries.
And now, Madam Chair, I believe we need to vote on the motion to approve the provision that was reconsidered.
Okay. All those in favor of the provision say aye.
Aye.
All say nay. No.
No.
The motion fails. And so now we are Senator Bach.
That was another House provision that just failed.
I know. It was difficult for us. Okay, so we've got Representative Marquardt. Do you want to take up the truth in taxation, or what did we decide on that? Do you feel like you can't work that out with the Senate conferees tonight?
No, and I think there's some school-related problems on that, so I think we'll hold off on that.
Okay. Thank you. Representative or Senator Skoy, are you ready for seasonal rec
well,
delay?
Madam Chair and members, I think we're to the point where if I would move to delay the implementation of the seasonal rec from 09 to 010 and let the staff work out. There's a couple of little technical difficulties that staff has been working on. If we could give them the authority to resolve those, that motion would deal with it. And I'm looking at Mr. Hines to see if he thinks that works, and he's shaking his head yes. So I would move that we delay the implementation of the seasonal rec changes from 2009 to 2010.
Okay, so everyone understanding Senator Skoy's motion to delay the implementation from 2009 to 2010 for seasonal rec.
And the staff is going to work out a couple of technical difficulties in the language.
With direction to staff. Okay, discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Say nay. Motion carries. You ready for sales tax moratorium yet, Senator Falk? We're serious. We want to slam the door shut. We want to bolt it. We want people to not be able to find the door. We want to tear up the map. Senator Bach, what do you want to do on local option sales taxes?
Madam Chair, if the Senate were to consider that in some amended form, I'm wondering what the House might be able to consider of the Senate.
So still not ready.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you
well,
want to consider
we want to get there tonight.
Provision that probably could...
We're working on it.
Talk about a little horse trade.
Okay, we're working on it. Do other members have other issues I've forgotten to raise so far? Do we want to take up senior deferral? Are we ready for that?
I'm certainly ready.
Would folks like to talk about that during the recess? Senior deferral?
That might be a good idea.
Okay, so I think we're going to get ready to recess, and if I understand it correctly, we may be working on senior deferral. Levy limits, possibly. We're going to try to meet with the commissioner. We want to have the commissioner get us some specific run information. And so we're hoping to see that for cities and counties. Are there other issues that folks want to clear out right now before we take a recess? Okay, so with that, and how long should we say? Half hour? Okay, we're in recess for 30 minutes. No, you and I and Joanne and Joel need to meet first, real quick.
Yeah, well, we need to meet with Ann.
Joanne and Joel, you and me. Okay. Okay.
Yep, that's first. Where should we go, Ann?
Oh, we haven't got a lot of issues.
Whoa. I don't know that we'll need to.
Are we pushing on the
Okay, so I just wanted to know
Paul's either going to have to.
No, because you shouldn't. We don't know.
We're going to have to. Or that was a couple four.
All right.
So I would rather sign it.
You know, they can bring it to you to sign no matter where you are.
Are you picking up the garbage here? I'll help.
The first thing we did was the Senate basically adopted the House for the contribution refund.
Oh, Paul is
on the floor here, so I'm gonna scoop down there. I don't want it.
We're voting. It's more appropriate.
Every once in a while.
Yeah, right, right.
Tape's not on. Is it on now? Okay, I'm calling the Tax Conference Committee back to order. It's 5 to 12. So we just want to follow the rules, the temporary joint rules of the Senate and the House. A conference committee may not meet between the hours of midnight and 7 a.m., except that a committee may extend a meeting for up to 1 hour past midnight by a vote of 2/3 of the members appointed to the committee by each House. So I'll make that motion now to go past midnight. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Say nay. Motion carries. I was just going to recess. I was just going to recess. You want to meet or recess?
Recess.
We're going to recess for 5 minutes. We are in recess. The Tax Committee will come back to order. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move the DV0148 amendment. This is the language that we discussed regarding the Mall of America that we directed staff to work on.
Does everybody have the Mall of America language? There's public copies right there. Everybody knows what, if you guys want to take a minute to look at it. And I don't have my copy. I was going to look at my original stuff. I guess, Mr. Chair, do we want to tell people anything about it, what changed? You know, I don't think anyone's seen any language, so I think it should be. We covered it.
I mean, we talked about it all orally and what we directed staff to do relative to the change in the TIF district.
Should we have Mr. Michael walk through it for a minute?
Yeah, sure. That's fine.
Mr. Michael, you want to walk through the amendment for the public?
I think the easier issue for folks who are trying to figure it out, or Joanne and Joel, one of you want to just walk through the amendment. We've only talked about it orally. I think a lot of people don't know all the details. Ms. Off.
Madam Chair, members, the first section of the proposal here essentially transfers some parcels from the earlier tax increment financing district 1C to tax increment financing district number 1G, which has a 3-year longer term to go. And the gist of the changes here, this legal description, basically would have the effect of moving the property that is everything but the Mall of America Phase 1 building. So the perimeter of that building and the parking ramps will be transferred from District 1C to District 1G. And that description goes through page 2, line 22, there's an addition to the original tax capacity of that newer, the increased district that's the equivalent of what had been the original tax capacity of the parcels that had been moved into that. The increments from this district can be used to pay debt service on the revenue bonds issued under this provision, to reimburse the developer for public improvements, and to pay the debt service on bonds or other obligations that might be issued by the city or the Port Authority to finance the capital improvements in the district. This specifies that these public improvements are limited to improvements for which tax increments could have been expended under the tax increment financing plan for that district. The bill provides that the public hearing on the district modification has to be conducted after published notice, and the meeting must begin between 6 and 7 p.m. on a weeknight. The earlier provision that had required a unanimous vote of all the members of the City Council in attendance has been taken out. The provisions that in Subdivision 5 govern some of the elements of the agreement, they would include the provision from last year's bill that the construction would be, as far as practicable, consisted of American-made constructed of American-made steel. And then there's also a detailed description of the types of entertainment venues that would be permitted to be constructed on the premises, and no other venues would be entertainment venues would be allowed there. There's a living wage agreement in Subdivision 6 on page 3 that is similar to what had been in the recent Senate proposal. Page 4, Subdivision 7, requires that the agreement would provide for affordable access to the amusement areas of the facility. There's a labor peace agreement in Subdivision 8 relating to the hotel workers. Section 2, beginning on line 20 of page 4, authorizes additional local taxes that may be imposed by the city of Bloomington. Subdivision 2 establishes a special taxing authority that would be a separate political subdivision, and the reason for doing that is to avoid a problem with the streamlined sales tax provisions. Within that special taxing authority would be able to impose a sales tax, a general sales tax of up to 1% within the boundaries of the two tax increment financing districts that constitute Phase 1 and Phase 2. Subdivision 3 on page 5 authorizes the city to impose a local lodging tax between 0.75% and 1%. If the city imposes this tax, it has to be imposed throughout the city and not just at the mall location. Subdivisions 4 and 5 authorize the city to impose admissions and recreation taxes up to 1% and then a food and beverage tax of up to 3%. And this could be imposed within the area of a taxing district that would be established by the city council that would have to include the mall areas, both Phase 1 and Phase 2, but could also include a broader area, and that area would not be required to be contiguous. Subdivision 6 provides that the city may use the unobligated proceeds of any of its existing city lodging taxes for the purposes of this bill, to the extent they're not pledged for any other specific uses. Section 3 is the bonding provision. This would authorize the City of Bloomington to enter into an agreement either with the Commissioner of Finance, the Agricultural and Economic Development Board, or the Public Facilities Authority to issue the bonds for this purpose. The revenue sources on Subdivision 3 are specifically limited to either the tax revenues that are provided under this provision or other non-state revenues pledged to the payment of the bonds. Before the bonds are issued, the issuing authority is required to certify that the mall meets criteria, including that it draws from over 150 miles away, more than 10 million visitors annually, employs more than 10,000 people, incorporates transit facilities and services, and generates state and local tax revenues in excess of $50 million annually. Much of the rest of the language the rest of this page is kind of boilerplate for bonding. Subdivision 8 on page 8 specifies that any bonds that are issued under this section are not general or moral obligations of the issuing authority and specifies that the full faith, credit, and taxing powers of the state are not pledged for their purposes. So these are strictly revenue bonds. And I think most of the rest of that section is pretty conventional bonding language. There in Section 4, there are a number of findings that must be made before the city and the authority can act under this to issue the bonds and get into the financing.
Ms. Opp, I know you're getting distracted there.
You're talking to him, yeah.
There's a provision on the theater that we believe is not quite accurate, and they're working on the amendment. So continue.
Super.
I can see you're probably trying to figure out if there's a panic in the room on the mall. Ms. Opp.
The breaking news.
What your favorite?
And Ms. Opp, I also think there's a, when we get to the end here, the date that's set for the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy, just has not been set yet. So there's a couple things, but I think you can just continue through the walkthrough, and then we'll go back.
Okay. It requires the Commissioner of Finance to determine that the assistance that's going to be provided for this purpose is necessary in order to make the project financially feasible. And then it requires the city, the authority, the developer, and the commissioner to enter into a development agreement that would spell out the minimum private improvements that would be made before any assistance would be provided, the developer's contribution to the parking facility, the dates when the enterprise will begin and end, requirement that assistance will be used solely for the construction of these parking facilities. The authority will be the owner. And the requirement that prevailing wage be paid on this project, and that all costs for the operation, maintenance, and repair of the public parking facilities would be paid by the developer. The developer is required to advance funds for the construction of the parking facility, and the authority will only reimburse the developer after completion of the construction. The developer, Clause 9 on line 33 of page 10, provides that the developer is subject to a recapture provision in which not less than half of the amount by which the return on the project to the developer exceeds the competitive market return would be paid one half to the city and one half to the state. Right, and this repayment would not be more than the present value of the assistance that had been provided to the developer. The developer is required to provide the information necessary to negotiate the development agreement and evaluate the need for the assistance that's required in this section. The commissioner would then submit this development agreement to the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy for its approval, and the agreement would not be effective until it's approved by the commission. And we do need to fill in that date for the review.
I'm supposed to pick it? Senator Bach, you and I both serve on that committee. Should we just pick it and tell Senator Pogamiller? You know, is this something we can add later? I guess we didn't check on this detail.
Yeah, we don't know how long it's going to take to put this whole financing plan together and be ready to submit it. So that's why it was left blank. I don't know. I mean, maybe we could talk with some of the people involved.
We're going to have staff call the speaker. And Senator Pogamiller.
Mr. Michael, does it matter if we clarify the date?
Yeah.
What if we just said
you could take the date out altogether.
Just leave it for approval.
Yeah, because sure. I think why don't we do that? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Off. I think Mr. Michael has a change that's just been worked out around the room. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, it's on page 3, line 21. Instead of that, that line would instead read, containing at least 2/3 of the theater's total seats, comma, which are located at fixed tables, comma, at which substantially, comma, and then at which substantially all of the admissions for performances will include meals, and which we may have to finesse that a little bit to make sure the grammar is right, but the concept was to make sure that 2/3 of the seats are not only located at fixed tables, but they're also on the main floor. And the way it was, the structure of the syntax made it a little ambiguous as to whether it was just that they had to be located at fixed tables, but the intent was apparently to have them both be on the main floor and located at fixed tables. The idea here is to make this a dinner theater, basically.
Discussion on the Hillstrom Amendment. Senator Bach.
Offer a friendly oral amendment that President Hillstrom might take on lines 11.10. Delete the words by 2008 and insert a period.
I would incorporate that.
Okay, so that's been incorporated. Anything else? Further discussion on the Hillstrom motion. Let me get the amendment right here.
said,
well,
the terrace mean floor of the fence.
Okay, so the Hillstrom Amendment is the DV0148. This is the Mall of America discussion. Mm-hmm. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay.
No.
The amendment is adopted. Senator Bach.
Chair, I have the LL0511. And I have a oral amendment I'd like to incorporate.
Yes, please, Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, I'd like to incorporate on lines 5.5. Delete the words and 2009. Line 5.5, delete the words and 2009. And on lines 5.26, delete the words and 2009. And on line 6.8, the end of the sentence, it says years. Make that singular, so delete the S off year, so it reads year. I'd like to incorporate that oral amendment. Members, what this is it's, you know, last night we offered a levy limit proposal in the Senate, did not confer with it. It was a two-year levy limit. This is the same levy limit. We'll save about $20 million. We anticipate $20 million of levy reduction 1 year, instead of two like last night, but other than that, it's the same, except that if the LG and this bill does not go into effect, the levy limits don't go into effect. So I renew my motion on the LL0511 as orally amended.
Discussion to Senator Bach's motion. Senator Dibble.
Just a quickly technical on 3.29, just the that effective date. The words and thereafter need to be.
Ms. Dalton.
Ms. Dalton drafted this. Let's see what she.
Chair, Senator Dibble, no, you want to leave them in there. We leave the levy limit language in so we don't have to keep redrafting it anytime somebody wants to reimpose levy limits. So even though the language stays, which is why you need the and thereafter, it won't be effective unless you say levy limits are in effect.
Thank you.
We're okay. On Senator Bach's motion, the levy limit amendment, discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay.
No.
The motion carries. Senator, do you have anything else, Mr. Chair?
Madam Chair, I can't think of anything else that.
I have one thing I want to say. If you don't have any amendments, then we can both say something.
I don't.
Any amendments?
Senate members?
Anybody?
No.
Okay. I just ask the conferees to join me in thanking all of the House, both partisan and non, all of the Senate, both partisan and non, and all of the revenue staff who's been helping us. We really appreciate all the work you've done for us. Please, thank you. And they are quite a group. We are very fortunate, all of us in the legislature, they're the people who make us look like we know what we're talking about, and we really, really do thank you so much. Senator Bach, I want to personally thank you and all the conferees. It's been another good time around the table, sometimes not such a great time, but that's part of the process. I personally want to thank the Commissioner of Revenue for all he's done. We've had some disagreements this year, some strong disagreements, but we've had a lot of strong agreements, and relationships always need to remain intact. I want to thank the House conferees, and, of course, it's been really nice to have two new House conferees, and, of course, Senator Dibble is a new conferee. And of course, thank all of the people in the room, all the people who are here lobbying for real people with real concerns. And I think it's been a open and fair, sometimes long, conference committee. But I hope everyone feels they've been able to be heard. Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move that the adopted provisions from House File 3149 and Senate File 2869 and the associated spreadsheet be adopted now by this conference committee, and that staff be allowed to make technical corrections to any of the language.
On the Bach motion to adopt the report, discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion carries. Mr. Chair, any closing comments?
Let's go home.
That's
I hope we're done.
I hope we're done, too. Thank you. Thank everybody in the room. We are adjourned.